Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
It certainly is that time. This week, Andrew Little and I discussed the post-prison support available for people who have been released and the government's response, or lack of, to the Israeli court ordering New Zealanders to pay a fine for encouraging Lorde to cancel her Tel Aviv concert. So here is Andrew.
There's almost a 1 in 3 chance of prisoners ending up back in prison in their first year after release. I mean, is this good enough?
No, it's not. And then if you go at 2 years, it's actually 60% reoffending, right? That's reoffending. And then it's say there's a number that wind up back in prison. No, it's not. And I think that's part of the question we have to ask about just putting more and more people in prison for longer. It's not actually changing reoffending rates. The one thing we expect of people who go through the criminal justice system, if they're sentenced, convicted and sentenced, is that something about them changes, and that normally only happens when they get the help they need to change what it is, or help them with what it is that is at least in part a driver to their offending. We're not doing that, or if we're doing it, we're not doing it well enough or extensively enough, and I think that's what we need to change in the system. The real measure of the effectiveness of the system is whether or not we are reducing reoffending, and our track record on that is one of the worst in the developed world, and it hasn't changed in the last 20 years.
So is the government spending enough on reintegration services? Because I suppose many, after they're released, have no choice but to go back to the support network they had before they went to prison, and often these people aren't the best influence.
Yeah, I think that's become apparent now, and I think Corrections has actually started to do a really good job of realising that just releasing prisoners with no real support, no further follow-up, or without much regard to where they're going to house themselves. So that's why in this year's budget, Corrections successfully bid for and got money to build their own network of houses around the country. So there are places, good places, for them to release prisoners who are ready for release to go to. But I think there's a lot more we can and need to do. I think preparing those who've been in prison for release, part of it is while they're in prison, addressing those underlying problems, the depression, the anxiety, the literacy issues, the skills issues, the addiction issues, and then when they're out of prison, actually taking a bit of time to do some follow-up. I was visiting a program in South Taranaki last week with young male offenders. They're dealing with young male offenders. These are folks, most of whom have offended, and they do partly residential, and, you know, just kind of life skills and that sort of thing. But the difference between this program and pretty much every other one I've seen is they then, once the person goes back to their community, is they follow up for the following year. They're in regular contact for the full year, and sometimes longer, depending on the person, once they're back in their community, to see that they're doing the right things, that they're needing the other help or support, or their issues that they have to have dealt with. That whole thing about the support is there long after you've left, because it takes a while for people to make adjustments to their life and reintegrate and change, you know, the habits of a lifetime.
Now, will the government be looking at sort of possibly funding more programs like this, or taking a more hands-on role in the reintegration of ex-prisoners?
Yeah, well, Kelvin Davis is Corrections Minister, myself and Stuart Nash is Police Minister. This is what occupies most of our time now, is looking at stuff, you know, not just what we know works here, what we've tried out here, but from overseas as well, as we start to put together bids for next year's budget about, you know, getting some extra resources to put into this sort of stuff. We're not going to fix the problem in a short space of time, but I think there's a growing awareness and acceptance that we need to be putting more resources into some of this stuff. The activities that we do with people once they're in prison, and also the follow-up and support they get once they're released from prison. So we're spending a lot of time and effort on putting together suitable programs and bits of funding for those programs at the moment.
Do you feel difficulty in getting work for people released from prison is an issue? Are they discriminated against because of their criminal past?
Look, I think many do. Having said that, I know that there are some amazing employers who make it an explicit part of their recruitment to say, we're going to give these folks a chance. In fact, in a few weeks' time, by meeting a community of employers just on this very topic, and some leaders in that community who want to say, he's saying, look, we want to do our bit. We want to be part of a program of offering employment to people who have done time, and you know, contributing what we can do, what we can when they're inside, and then once they're ready for release, providing them with opportunities, which I think is great. I really take my hat off to those employers. That's a risk many other employers don't want to take, but they.
Do you think it is a risk?
Oh, I know. Well, if you don't know, it's an unknown quantity, and if we've got a 60% reoffending rate at the moment, if you're an employer, you're thinking, gee, if I take this person on, there's a 60% chance that they're going to reoffend. Therefore, more court processes, and a 42% chance to go back in prison. You know, why would I take that risk? So, but I think employers who are actually involved in recruiting those who have done time in prison, I mean, they typically are involved in training and skills for people while they're in prison, and then they see an opportunity to provide work, paid work for those people once they're out. And if we can kind of start to bridge a bit of that gap, get more employers engaged in that, and see that they're determined to do things wrong, but they can change and they can make a useful contribution, then I think we can go a long way to improving employment prospects for a lot more people.
And moving on, there's been a muted response from the government over an Israeli court ordering two New Zealanders to pay a fine for encouraging Lord to cancel a concert in Israel. What are your thoughts on this ruling?
I made a comment. I think the law that was being applied is a highly political piece of law. It comes from the more kind of dogmatic, ideological end of the Israeli political system. I think a judge applying that law, you know, the idea that you sit in an Israeli court judging the actions of people who are outside of the country, whose actions were committed outside of the country, then imposing a sanction and expecting that to be taken seriously, I think is outrage. It is a constitutional outrage. Added to all that is of course, the law is designed to suppress freedom of speech. It's because you've got the extremists in the Israeli government and the Israeli system. We think that Israel is beyond criticism. They're not. They've got a lot to account for. And that's, you know, Lord's statement was really much about saying, I don't want to be associated with a government that treats some people in the way that they do. That's what the two women who wrote the letter to Lord were saying. But the judgment is a joke. The law under which the judgment was made is a joke. And if I was the judge who made that judgment, I'd be extraordinarily embarrassed because I could not show myself in a legal conference here again and say I uphold the rule of law, because you clearly don't under a law like that.
Do you think there should have been more condemnation from our government? This is a foreign court interfering with our citizens, trying to impact on their freedom of speech. Do you think there should have been a stronger response to Israel?
It's always hard to know where to draw the line. I think a lot of people expressed a view. I think most people looked on the whole issue with the contempt that it deserved, having more politicians climbing in. I think, I'm not sure whether that adds to it. And I think, you know, because it was the Israeli court, do politicians get involved in calling an ambassador to say this is unacceptable? There's that line that has to be drawn between what happens in judicial circles and what happens in political circles. If it were a politician that had made some decision about that, then almost certainly.
But I mean, I suppose the decision was made after a piece of legislation, so it is political.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I know the news came out, I think, in the weekend. You know, many politicians, myself included, tend to have pretty busy schedules during the weekend. I didn't make much of an effort to sort of get on the front foot about it. I was approached about it and made my comments, which were along the lines I've just given you. Where that goes and what that does, particularly to the Israeli government, it's always hard to gauge.
Mm. So just finally, I suppose, do you support their decision not to pay the fine?
Absolutely. I think they're doing absolutely the right thing. All power to them to, and good on them too for seeing it as an opportunity to see the absurdity and to raise money for those in the Gaza Strip. I think that was the right way to go.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.